Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Eugene Friedman, a union lawyer, writes about baseball labor relations and really can help us with all this stuff. Eugene, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us. And you know, obviously this is a very complicated subject. Fans are frustrated. Generally, fans blame both sides. You know, I happen to be a big union guy from where I grew up, and so I generally side with unions on these things. And I have in this case too. I do think it seemed odd at the end yesterday, even though I think the owners never negotiated in good faith on games. I did find it odd that essentially that the players didn't at yesterday's point at least accept it, because it seemed like how much could they win in an arbitration or in a grievance here? I don't know, but please tell me, do you think in the end did the players do the right thing yesterday, not coming to this agreement after their initial agreement in March?
Yeah, I think that, like you said, it was a very complicated negotiation. And I think part of that was because initially management came to the table and said, we want to reopen what we've already agreed to. And the players were not willing to do that. So a lot of the negotiation for really the first 6 weeks of it, the parties weren't making true progress towards an agreement. But I think ultimately the process itself won out, because in the end, both the union recognized that the commissioner had the authority to set the schedule, and management recognized that the union and they had already agreed to pro rata salaries. And when push came to shove on all of the other issues that weren't related to health and protocols that would prevent spread of COVID, the only thing they could really do is fall back to that March agreement.
Right. You know, I'm curious, why is it you talk about that, the much talked about clause, if you will, in that March agreement? Here's what I don't understand. Was it not clear to both sides when they were done with that negotiation what that meant? Like, what happened here that allowed both sides essentially to say, we see it this way and we see it that way? How do you explain that part?
Well, I think one of the things was that Major League Baseball may have had immediate regrets about what they agreed to, because they did have in seven other places in that agreement that there was economic feasibility specifically mentioned as a criteria for one thing or another thing. What they did not list it was on the pro rata salary. The pro rata salary was very explicit. It stated unequivocally that the players would receive, and it laid out a formula, but it basically said the players will receive 1/162nd of their salary for every game played. And it didn't have a caveat in there that said, if it's economically unfeasible as determined by the commissioner, the parties would renegotiate. I think there were second thoughts about that. And so the commissioner's office tried to spin it through media frequently who work for Major League Baseball. And that media put out, well, there is a dispute. There is some confusion about what it means. I think that the parties knew all along that there wasn't confusion about what it means. I think that there was a letter that came out in an article in The Athletic by Evan Drellish and Ken Rosenthal. That letter was kept quiet, but it was issued in March, in mid-May, and it essentially said, we agree with the Players Association. There's nothing that requires the players to agree to less than pro rata pay. And the Players Association didn't release that until the commissioner started talking about imposing. And I think at that point, the players said, they haven't even given us a proposal that complies with our agreement. All of their proposals are for us to accept less, even though they've admitted in a written document that we have no responsibility on this issue at all to continue bargaining.
You think there's any chance the players have a legit shot in a grievance?
I think that the grievance became significantly weaker when the commissioner imposed 60 games. Because at this point in time, when the bargaining has actually concluded, they really only have 66 days left. And in those 66 days, they really can only play 60 games. Had he imposed 48 games, which had been reported for weeks, I think they would have had some significant argument on the grievance. Now the grievance will rely on the fact that they didn't reach an agreement earlier. And, you know, that's a much more difficult grievance to prove. Because in this case, had the commissioner imposed 48 games, but had earlier in the week said, well, we could do 60, he's basically saying, I'm giving you less than what we can do, and that's not meeting the best efforts clause. But by giving 60, I think he took out a lot of the legs of the grievance.
We're talking with union attorney Eugene Friedman. Eugene, so in the end, if you think they don't have a good case, and you're a union guy, why do you think was it almost out of principle that they did not agree to this latest proposal? Because there were some benefits that they're going to lose, like a potentially DH next year, some forgiveness on the money that was laid out to some of the lower paid players. Was it just kind of a principle thing at the end?
Well, I think there were a number of factors to it. I think they were still frustrated by the delay in the bargaining process. I mean, had they gotten to the exact same point a week earlier, they probably could have done 70 games. But they didn't get there, unfortunately. And so I think the principal played into it a lot. But I think also the players were concerned about increasing playoffs this year because the proposal, at least through yesterday afternoon, included playoff increases for this year and next year. And right. For this year, there was a difference of $25 million in terms of the playoff share that would be given to the players. For next year, the commissioner's proposal as of yesterday afternoon was they're going to split playoff share exactly as they have done in all of history, which is basically gate receipts. The Players Association was proposing it to be 50% of the difference, 50% of the increase in the TV revenue from adding a new playoff round. And I thought that that was set up to, by both parties, as a way to pre-negotiate the share of TV revenue on the national TV contract for playoffs in the next CBA. And I think the commissioner realized at the end that could have been the thing that sunk the deal. And so at probably around 4 o'clock, there were reports that the commissioner has changed his proposal, that the Players Association has postponed their meeting, and they ultimately met later in the day. So I think that was something that was going to make it an even, I think the vote was 33 to 5 against. I think that ultimately the players said, we're not going to lose anything by voting this down. We're still going to get 60 games. As you mentioned, there is that $33 million that was forwarded to the players in advance. That won't be forgiven as part of this. But I don't think the players were expecting it ultimately to be forgiven. I think they were anticipating that it was just an advance on their salary. And so I think they're kind of they probably thought of that as self-insured because they weren't expecting that money to be as a forgiven loan. They just expected it as an advance on their salary.
You think we're going to go through this again next year if there are no fans?
You know, the hard part is that the parties don't necessarily trust each other, and so that always leads to problems in collective bargaining. I'm hopeful that, you know, regardless of anyone's political affiliation, I think everybody hopes that there's a quick some way to solve this virus so that we can get back to a semblance of normalcy in this country. And if they can develop a vaccine relatively quickly, I think that's the thing that's holding people back from saying, I want to go to games. I want to get on airplanes. I want to do all of these things that I normally would do. And so, you know, if that timeline of January for a vaccine is at all reasonable, maybe we can get back to games in April of next year. I think we all have to be optimistic about it.
Yeah, Eugene, would baseball be better off in terms of negotiations going forward if Rob Manfred and Tony Clark were both replaced?
I would never say that that's the best option. I think they probably need to address their internal process with each other. There were a lot of leaks in this process. There was a lot of backbiting in public. And I think that if they did that behind closed doors and merely issued a statement there, we are working through our issues. We haven't agreed to everything. You know, some of the issues are contentious, but we think we can reach a voluntary agreement that everybody will be satisfied with. I think that kind of ground rule for their future negotiations would be beneficial for both parties. I think it would be beneficial for the fans. I think the only people who would be dissatisfied with that are the writers who are getting these scoops of all the leaks. And I know it's their job to ask, but I think in this case, it was the parties themselves reaching out and giving the information. It wasn't as much as the writers were really, you know, following their lead and getting information. I think it was the parties giving information directly to the press. And I think that slowed the process down. I think it undermined the process between the parties because there are always conflicts in collective bargaining.
Right.
Even when you reach a voluntary agreement, there have been knockdown, drag out discussions on some issues. But those things are done behind closed doors. Nobody needs to know about it except for the two contract teams that are negotiating.
And in particular, listen, the rhetoric from both sides when you're in a labor negotiation is always bad and always ugly. But the tone deafness of it, with all these terrible things happening in the country and the world, as you've already alluded to, did both sides get it? Do they realize how bad it looks?
You know, I think that it's hard to say. I mean, I would say that I was disappointed in the commissioner's public relations plan. I mean, to go
Great.
Out on TV and say, I 100% guarantee a season, and then within 3 days say, I can't guarantee anything, that really looked bad, more than anything else. Mm-hmm. I think the rhetoric, the normal back and forth, sometimes it gets heated, sometimes it shows cracks between the parties. I'm not as concerned about that. I think when you go out and make a promise and then backpedal from that promise, that undermines not just your own credibility, but in this case, I think it undermines the credibility of the game itself. And I felt that that was pretty unfortunate.
Last thing, and we're talking with Eugene Friedman, attorney. The last thing for me is it looks like now that the union has told ownership that they are prepared for spring training on July 1st and that they're working out some final health protocols. Do you think fans should be concerned at all with all the contentiousness that there could be a late snag on the protocols that could still sabotage the season?
I don't think that the protocols themselves could sabotage the season, but I am concerned that the virus could sabotage the season.
Sure.
Because we've seen in a lot of industries that, you know, different workplaces have had to shut down where one employee tests positive and they have to do decontamination. The people who worked with that person need to, quarantine for a week or 2 weeks. And that would really upset the game, obviously, if one team had to sit out because a player or two tested positive, or worse yet, went to the hospital with severe symptoms.
We appreciate the time, Eugene. Thank you for the great insight. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Eugene Friedman.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.